But he goes, you're like too positive. You're like Luke Skywalker, and sometimes you just want Darth Vader, you know? And I went home and I thought, am I always that shiny and hopeful and everything has like a happy ending and stuff? And so I wrote like my saddest song after that. And the first line was, sometimes I feel like I'm already dead.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, curiousgoldfish.com. Sentiment is something you don't hear much about these days. It kind of feels like life just happens, and with all the media and content in the world to consume, including podcasts like this, we barely have time to just sit and be, let alone time to properly reflect on the relationships and connections that enrich our lives and endure beyond our generation. In this second episode with singer-songwriter Mike Kennebrew, we continue discussing with Mike how the idea of sentiment and the things most important in his life continue to be the narratives his songwriting gravitates to. And Mike shares that he has a batch of new songs teed up for an album release sometime soon, and he closes this episode out with two songs, one off that upcoming new album and one unreleased called Letter from Betty. Mike performs both of these with the beautiful Lake Sinclair in Southeast Georgia as a backdrop and gets some help with backing vocals by a flock of Canadian geese soaring above the water. It was beautiful all the way around. We pick up the conversation talking about one of my favorite documentaries, Country Music by Ken Burns on PBS from about 6 years ago. I invite myself to make and to watch it with Mike, so hopefully that can happen one day. I'll bring the popcorn, Mike. Once again, here's Mike Kennebrew of Macon, Georgia. Let's jump back in.
So,
yeah.
Did you ever see the documentary that Ken Burns did on country music? Did you ever watch that?
No, I didn't. His Civil War one I've watched like more times than I can count, but no, I haven't seen the one on country music.
Yeah, so the country music one for me is the best thing that's ever been on television.
Oh man, I gotta see it.
You gotta see it.
Yeah,
I mean, especially with you and your history in the South.
Yeah,
history with the church.
Yeah,
history with music.
Mm-hmm.
Nashville.
Yeah,
I mean, Mike,
I gotta see it. How many parts is it?
It's eight, but each one is it's a little less than 2 hours. So,
total?
It's probably 16 hours.
Oh, that's good. I was about to feel really sad.
Yeah.
Give me a long one.
Yeah. No, so the, I'm not going to invite myself to make and to watch it with you, but I would love to watch it with someone like you for the first time.
Yeah.
Because you'd be like, oh my goodness. And again, this podcast isn't about Ken Burns, but where I have a point to bringing it up. But the whole thing that's amazing to me is the threads of country music.
Yeah.
So they start with like, you know, the Carter family.
Yeah.
And then it's Jimmy Rogers, you know, Hank Williams, Johnny Cash, you know, Dolly Parton, Loretta Lynn, you know, all the way up probably until to the mid late 90s. And they stop and they sort of allude to the current folks like Chris Stapleton and stuff, but
mm-hmm.
they only go into those generations, but it's the thread
through all
those. And it's the thread of faith. It's the thread of the instrumentation,
yeah.
bluegrass and everything. Anyway, where I'm going with it back to like the worrying and being on stage is I remember, you know, Roseanne Cash talking about her dad and, you know, Johnny Cash is awesome. That guy had some stuff going on.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And she said that he used the stage to work through all that shit.
Yeah.
You know,
that's awesome.
Yeah. So, and I always remember that. I'm like, that's, to your point, it's kind of the opposite. It's like, why would you go out in front of public and bare your soul when you're working on stuff in front of strangers?
Yeah.
You know, and I always thought that was wild that she said that about Johnny Cash. And then here you are sort of affirming that. Yeah.
I think maybe I'm just like processing it in real time, but you know, what what we want as people is, you know, when I say this is what I'm feeling, for someone to go, yeah, me too, you know, I get that. And when you put it in a song and you sing it and you see other people, it resonate with other people, then you're up there going, okay, well, I guess I'm not the only one, you know. And that's more comforting than the best advice a therapist can give you, is just when someone else feels the same thing. Yeah. You know,
no.
You talk to a therapist and you tell them something, and then they, when they tell it back to you, it's not at all what you said, and you go,
yeah, were you even listening?
Were you even, you don't get me, I don't want to be here, you know, immediately. But when we give our songs to people and they resonate, it's our way of being told that we're not alone.
Yeah.
With our deep, dark fears and worries and all that.
Well, back to the initial point where I was like, you know, Sentiment, your middle name.
Oh, yeah.
You know, we talked about some of the songs. So I think your most recent single was I Miss You.
Yeah.
Right. When you're not here. And that's obviously a song about your kids. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So like, you know, I can relate to that.
Right.
And then we talked about your grandparents and the first and last. So, like, you know, my parents will be married 60 years this year.
Wow. Yeah.
And it's, so it's, you know, that's not like a heartbreak or not like a anxious sort of thing, but it's like, that's rare these days. I guess my point in saying that your middle name could be Sentiment is I could totally relate to everything.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
And I love that.
I hope that people can relate to it. I never sit down and try to write about a certain thing, you know, so whatever comes, but sometimes I wish that they were just a little bit more fun and, you know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I get it.
Like, why does it always have to be so? There was this, I did this shootout, this open mic shootout thing where it was in Duluth. I was in the finals and it was me and this other guy, and I think I got this. Because it was the bracket thing, you know, you go head to head against someone, and then one person wins and goes on to the next and goes on to the next. And all the people that I was like, this person would take me out, they had been beaten, or I had knocked them out. And so by the time I was in the finals, I was like, I think I got this guy. I think my song that I've saved is going to be better anyway, but I lost. And then outside, we're leaving. And the judge is one of the judges. There were like four judges. And one of the judges he's been drinking all night. And he's like, man, I like you, but I couldn't vote for you in the end. Now, side note, he ended up riding back with the guy that beat me. They had ridden together from Nashville.
That's sketchy.
That's a little, yeah. I go, wait, y'all are together?
Yeah.
But he goes, you know, I just, you're like too positive. You're like Luke Skywalker, and sometimes you just want Darth Vader, you know? And I went home and I thought, am I always that shiny and hopeful and everything has like a happy ending and stuff? And so I wrote like my saddest song after that. And the first line was, sometimes I feel like I'm already dead.
Oh, God.
But that was the only time I sat down thinking, all right, I'm going to write, and this is what it's going to be dark. I'm going to be Darth Vader for this song. But for the most part, I just write whatever comes, you know? But yeah, it is super sentimental.
Oh, it's good. It's all, I love it. All right. So talked about your singles.
Yeah.
And I saw on Instagram that you'd spent time in Nashville, obviously hanging out with Theo Von and
we get ice cream together.
But you were up there recording.
Yeah.
Right. So tell us about that. Tell us what you have planned.
So I was just going to do about three songs with my friend Charlie Lowell. He was in a band called Jars of Clay back in the 90s.
Speaking of Christian music.
Oh
my gosh. Yeah. It all comes back. Full circle.
Charlie played keys on the last few singles that I had done in Nashville with a guy named Paul Moak was producing. And Charlie and I hit it off, and Charlie has a studio in Nashville with another Jars of Clay guy, Matthew Odmark. And so Paul was going on the road with Ann Wilson from Heart. He was playing guitar for her, and so he was going to be kind of gone a bunch, and I wanted to record, and Charlie and I had been talking about it. So I said, let me take these singles, and we'll do like, you know, three songs and see how it goes at your studio. And so we went, and when we were done with those three songs, I said, think maybe we were on the fence about one, like, should we do this one or do that one? I said, well, let's just do them both. I'll come back up. We'll do another song. And it just kind of kept spinning out where I just kept going back. And we did 15 songs. So Charlie played keys.
3 to 15. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. So Charlie and Matt produced it. And it's at a place called Gray Matters Studio in Nashville. And it's a great studio. Nate Duggar played guitar. Nate's Drew Holcomb's. He's one of the neighbors. And Rich Brinsfield, so the bass player, is one of the neighbors. And so they played. And a guy named Graham played drums. And brought in my friend Kenny Hudson, who was in a band called Vigilantes of Love back in the day. Do you remember?
Bill Maloney.
Bill Maloney, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
You need to interview Bill.
Can I tell you about Bill?
Please. Bill's a buddy.
Okay, so here's the thing. There's a few artists, I think you alluded to them earlier when you're like, hey, some of it's not crap when you're talking about Christian music.
Yeah.
And then there are some that are like a little bit Christian and a little bit not.
Yeah.
So I would put...
Bill's a lot of bit Christian and a lot of bit not.
Yes, which is great. But it's like, for me, it's like Mark Hurd.
Yeah.
Pierce Pettis.
Yeah.
Rich Mullins.
Yeah.
Even though Rich was in the Christian music industry.
But great songwriters.
He was probably, you know, he was my favorite.
Yeah.
Bill Maloney.
Yeah.
Some of the guys from Cademan's Call, mm-hmm. right? But like there's this like group that wasn't crap.
Yeah, agreed.
And the Vigilantes of Love, Welcome to Struggleville.
Oh, that album's so great, yeah.
Oh my gosh, so here's the thing. I just ordered, so Bill's really big on Bandcamp, I think.
Or, yeah, that's where he keeps all his stuff.
Yeah, he mm-hmm. keeps all his stuff, and he sent out this thing of like, you know, get the vinyl.
Yeah.
So I have, it's still unwrapped, Welcome to Struggleville. It's a beautiful looking album. But he had a return address. And literally 3 weeks ago, I wrote him a handwritten letter.
Out in New Mexico?
Out in New Mexico. Yeah. I'm like, I don't think he's ever going to see this. But I was like, hey, Bill, you know, I did the whole thing. Love your music, blah, blah, blah. Would you be on my podcast?
Yeah.
You know? And I haven't heard from him. But that to me, like, okay, Taylor Swift is running the world right now. Would I love to talk to Taylor? Yes. But actually, Bill would be amazing for
We'll have to make that happen.
Oh my gosh.
This episode will be so piss poor compared to talking to Bill. He's so great, man. He's when I was in, I looked up to him as much as anyone as a songwriter. And when I was in college, he took the time to talk to me when I was nobody. And I was in college. I remember emailing with him about a paper I was writing. And he was telling me like who I should write my freshman like English paper on, St. Francis of Assisi.
Was he a teacher at Athens?
I don't know if he was a teacher. Yeah. His son is a teacher, but I don't know what he did. He's from Athens.
Yeah, yeah.
And
that's amazing.
But
so back
to
Kenny Hudson. Sorry.
Yeah, Kenny played. Yeah, Kenny came in and played Kenny guitars, played and that was a big because. I used to, as a teenager, follow Vigilantes around, and I can remember Kenny just shredding on the guitar and the mandolin, the pedal steel, and then I played a show actually at the 40 Watt, and Kenny was headlining with the band, and I was opening for him, and I told him, I said, man, you were in VOL, and I just loved it, and so he and I kind of kept in touch, and it was a big thing for me to get Kenny to play on
amazing.
It, just because someone that you've, you know, looked up to for a long time.
That's incredible. I mean, back to Pace Magazine,
mm-hmm.
they, I think they were the only people you could actually get live at the 40 Watt, which was a Vigilantes of Love live album like 20 years ago.
Yeah.
I remember getting it on CD. And that's how I'm not from Georgia. I grew up in the Midwest in Colorado, but the 40 Watt, I was like, man.
Did it have reach out there? Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. And it was like, man, that place looks cool. And then, you know, I moved to Georgia and I went to a show in Athens, you know, recently and drove by the 40 Watt. I'm like, Vigilantes of Love. There it is. So it's funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I mean, what an ensemble of musicians that you just did that with. So did you, so the three songs that you had, were they kind of part of a theme? And then 15 songs is a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I guess, was that a backlog of songs and lyrics that you had been working on for a number of years?
So we did this album, this Live at Eddie's album in 2020. those were all new songs. None of them had ever been recorded, and the performance for that album was the first time they were performed live at all.
Oh, interesting.
And so some of those songs had never, I just felt like the live treatment wasn't the only, I wanted to give them their day in the studio and like, let's see what we can do with them, produce them. So about six of the songs are like First and Last,
right,
is was on the Live at Eddie's album, but we actually took it in the studio and did a sort of a different treatment,
okay,
of it. But then the rest of them are all new songs.
Okay.
It's a song called Good Day. Will probably be the first single. And then there's a song called Something Bad, which is like definitely like the other end of the spectrum of Good Day. They all kind of came out around the same time as far as a season of writing for a few months.
That's awesome. Is there a theme that will draw it all kind of together? And will you have 15 songs on an album, or will you save some for something else?
I was looking at, I was watching, speaking of documentaries, that Wallflower, not Wallflowers, Wildflowers, Tom Petty.
Oh, right. Yeah.
About the making of the album. Yes. And at some point, you know, they're going, we have so many songs, so now let's just decide what's going to go on the album, you know? And so I think I'll probably whittle that down to 10 or 12 and go, this will be the album, for the reason you said, you know, what actually thematically kind of fits. And then just have two or three songs to just toss out there.
Yeah.
One of the songs that we did was a cover, which I've never recorded before. I never recorded a cover, but it was These Days by Jackson Browne, which is like just a really sensitive song that he wrote when he was like 15 years old. And so that one maybe not go on the album, but maybe just be released as a single.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Okay. By the way, and this is kind of goes back to curiosity, what's the process of actually being able to cover an artist? Like, do you have to get permission, approval? What kind of process is that?
I think it used to be more difficult than it is now, but I'm not sure. I'm about to find out.
Are you?
Okay, yeah. Cool. Before we release it, I gotta go through the right channels.
Yeah, you gotta check the boxes. Yeah.
But yeah, there was. It used to be sort of almost the impression I had was, it's more trouble than it's worth.
Yeah.
You know, you might just want to not put someone else's song on your record.
Yeah.
But now I think maybe it's just easier.
Well, because YouTube is riddled with covers of people.
Exactly.
And, you know, and so it's like, okay, did the rules loosen?
Yeah.
And the streaming, you know, you get, you know, a 16th of a penny for every stream. And if you cover somebody.
Yeah.
Like how does, you know, do they get, you know, a third of that, but it seems it's more prevalent now.
Yeah, it definitely seems more prevalent. And maybe it's just because just technology has streamlined the permissions and the, you know, back when I was first recording music, it was, you know, snail mail and like, I'm going to write Jackson Browne and ask him I just think it's probably a lot easier and more expedited to or efficient to get those permissions, but I'm gonna have to check those boxes before I release it. But I did do a version of it and put it on I think TikTok or Instagram, or probably both, because they're linked together. But Jackson Browne shared it, his official account
shared it,
and that was really cool.
Yeah, that's really cool. So do you know if that's gonna be on the album for sure? I mean, have you picked the 10 or 12 yet or not?
I haven't picked them yet. No.
Yeah. What's the timing of that, do you think?
Well, I can start releasing them as early as next month.
Okay, cool.
I need to get my shit together, figure out what's going to go on and what order. And there's a lot of that stuff, artwork and all that, you know.
Do you have a name for it yet? Or
no.
That will probably come out of the songs you pick.
Yeah. If I've in the back of my mind, Good Day has been the single that I thought would go off first. So maybe the album is called Good Day. There's a song called Something Bad and Good Day. So maybe... Good Day and Something Bad could be the album title. But they're two sides of the same coin, you know.
Yeah, awesome. Well, that's exciting. So in closing, I guess at this point in your life and career, what are you most curious about?
That's a great question. I think I would be most curious about where life could take me if I just keep saying yes and keep putting one foot in front of the other, you know, not letting fear or insecurity or anything like that cause me to settle and just be stagnant.
but the last, I've been busier with music this year than I ever have been. And I think that is because I just decided to go, well, I wonder what would happen if I just kept walking forward, you know, and didn't stop because I was afraid that maybe I'm too old or maybe I'm, you know, not good enough or maybe whatever. Those were reasons that would cause me to stop. And I just started saying yes to everything and ended up becoming, you know, way busier than I've ever been and have more things on the books. And so I'm still curious to see where life takes me if I'll just keep doing that.
That's awesome. I love that answer.
It's
because you have so many years ahead of you.
It's what's left of me. It's, you know, it's okay. Rather than falling into that thinking of, well, whatever I was going to do, I guess I've done it, you know, for better or worse. I've done whatever. And now it's just time to accept it for what it is, but go, no, I mean, there's still life to be lived. And let's see. I wonder what we could do.
I mean, think about how many songs you still have in you.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously.
And it's so exciting to have a new song and go, oh, there's still, every songwriter, I think, feels like the last song was like, maybe that's it. Maybe I don't have, the well is dry now. Yeah. And when you have a new song, it's like, oh man, there's still something in me. That's great that I have to still have something to say or something to give.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your time. Could you play us some music?
Yeah, man.
All right. Thanks, Mike. Really appreciate it.
This is a new one. Not recorded, but all right. It's I got a letter from this old lady from my church named Betty. She sent us it was a few years ago. She died. She was 87 years old, and I found out they called me and told me she died because she was pretty close to me. She was, when we moved to Macon, she kind of took me under her wing. It was like a grandma to me, and I found out she died on my way home, and I got home, and on the island in the kitchen, there was a letter addressed to me, and it was from her, like handwritten, yeah, the same day, and I was like, whoa, wow. So I guess she had mailed it 2 days before, and I opened it up, and it was a little check for $20. We've been raising some money for this mission to orphans, and we were selling T-shirts and using the money to give it to this mission. And she was like, "Here's $20. I don't need the T-shirt. Just take the money, do some good with it." And I thought, man, what an awesome like way to go out, you know, like the last thing that I hear from you is you just giving, doing some good. So it's called Letter for Betty.
I got a letter from Betty on the day that she died. Right there on the counter in the kitchen, just imagine my surprise. Was a $20 check for a shirt she'll never wear. She said, "Give it to the kids, let it do some good out there." And I cried as I traced the line she sent from the other side. Oh, I got a letter from Betty on the day that she died. Betty was the first to tell me that she loved me in this town. Gave her time in church, folding letters for the things that they'd send out. With a mother's eye for the lonely child, she took my hand in hers. I don't think that she ever knew how much her love was worth. Ain't it funny how the simple words can mean the most if they come at the right time? And I got a letter from Betty on the day that she died. Punctuate their lives with such grace. What messages will the ones I love find when I finally leave this place? Just a legacy of longing to be seen and to be heard. Maybe our lives are better spent being burned up like autumn leaves on a fire log to warm somebody else's night. And I got a letter from Betty on the day that she died.
Singing.
That's
really pretty.
Yeah,
thanks, man.
Another
great song.
All right. This is Something Bad.
Do you ever get the feeling on a perfect afternoon? Something bad is gonna happen pretty soon. And it keeps you a little nervous, 'cause you know that you deserve it. Life's been far too easy for you. And all this time you thought you got away, and all your crimes tracked you down today. You don't wanna say it louder, you're afraid to give it power. Something bad is gonna happen pretty soon. Do you live with a monster, though you do not know his name? He's followed you around since you were young. Just when you think it's clear, you'll feel his breath on your ear, saying one day, I'm gonna get you, son. And every night he sleeps beneath your bed. You're looking right, he's sneaking up on the ledge. He says, let me tell you something, you'll never see me coming, but something bad. The day when you'll lay your body down and your lifetime of worry is no more. Through the good times and the bad, through the happy and the sad, you never knew what you were waiting for. It's such a shame, it's a perfect afternoon. There you lay, silent as the moon. And your only consolation, You won't live in trepidation that something bad is gonna happen pretty soon.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us too. Until next time, stay curious.